Well, it's that time of year again, and I wish we were talking about the holidays, but if you haven't started thinking about strategies to save money on your taxes, well, Vince and his guest are here with some tax planning food for thought on this edition of Your Money Manual. And now, along with today's special guest in his Scottsdale office, here's the host of Your Money Manual, the CEO of Wealth Strategies Advisory Group and creator of the Household Endowment Model, Vince Annable.
Hello, hello, hello. Hey, Jeff, how are you? Welcome all to Your Money Manual, which is an educational program we created because we know when it comes to investing, guess what? Your money does not come with instructions. So our objective is to provide you with a fresh perspective on wealth management to help you grow, preserve, and protect your assets so that you can build a more secure financial legacy for you and for your family. So along with our producer, Jeff Allen, I'm Vince Annable. And on this particular edition of the program, we're going to talk about everybody's favorite subject during the holiday season, and that is taxes. Or more appropriately today and this time of year, we like to talk about tax planning. And our special guest is our authority on tax planning, and that is Trent Erickson. He's a partner at Legacy CPAs in Mesa, Arizona. We work very closely with Trent. He services all of our accounts and many, many of our clients. And Trent, welcome to the show today.
Well, thank you, Vince.
So what we want to talk about today, Trent, is we want to talk about tax planning versus tax preparation, just to warm things up a little bit. Because as you and I both know, when it comes to taxes, people are spending very little time tax planning, and most everything is done in tax preparation because typically their accountants do not focus on the planning side, only on the preparation side. So what kind of insight can you have in comparing the two, and why planning is such a valuable tool at the end of the year for them?
The main reason that we do tax planning is to help us in one of three ways. I look at tax planning in three different categories. The first category and the first benefit of tax planning and the first thing we try to accomplish with tax planning is to eliminate taxes that can be eliminated. We may do this through planning for equipment purchases for a business owner. We may do this through various other tools, which we'll get into during our conversation today. But to differentiate between the two, tax planning is something that is very proactive, while tax preparation is reactive. We want to be proactive with tax planning so that we know how to eliminate any taxes that we can. After we've eliminated what taxes we can eliminate, we then look at deferring taxes. Are there taxes that would be due in the coming year that we could defer to the following year or the year after that or the year after that? So deferring taxes is another powerful tool. And then the last benefit of tax planning, which is also just as important as the first two, is planning to pay that tax. Wouldn't you like to know right now or by the end of the year how much tax you're going to owe come April? I think it's very difficult to, I know from my side, it's very difficult to make those phone calls on April 15th telling my client that they owe a large sum of money to the IRS or to the state of Arizona or any other state where they need to pay tax. Whereas with our tax planning, and if you're planning properly, you should know by the end of the year how much money you're going to owe by April 15th. So again, just to summarize, those are the three benefits of our tax planning, is to eliminate, defer, and then plan to pay our taxes.
So Trent, help me out. If I were to use the analogy that tax planning is looking out your windshield, looking ahead, planning ahead, if you're driving down the road in your Ferrari F430, and compare that to tax preparation, which is simply looking in the rearview mirror. That's where everybody gathers up their 1099s or K1s or W2s. They take them over to what their accountant might be, and the accountant takes a look at those and enters all that data into their computer program, spits out a report, says, here's what you owe. So would that be a good analogy between the two?
It is a very good analogy, but let me add one thing to that, Vince.
Okay.
The thing that we can add to that is when you bring all of your K-1s and your 1099s and all of your tax data to us to prepare your return, there's not a lot I can do at that point, at that stage in the preparation of a return to save you money in taxes. Most of the things that we can do to save you money in taxes need to be done or planned for before the end of that tax year. So if you're bringing me your tax data in March, I can't go back in time to December and give you some of the recommendations or some of the things that we could have done to lower your tax bill.
Fantastic. And I think that the tip here for our listeners is that you need to be proactive. You need to get in touch with somebody who does tax planning, not just tax preparation, and start looking ahead into next year, but finalize it and know what's happening before the year is out so you can make many of the different adjustments. So speaking of adjustments, there are different tax planning strategies that we can implement before year end to accomplish reducing, mitigating, eliminating taxes for our clients. And I'm going to ask you, Trent, if you would go through, we have what we refer to as above the line deductions, we have below the line deductions. And then at the end, what I'd like to do is just wrap it up with some tax planning strategies specifically for business owners. So maybe you could go through a couple of the different types of strategies we can use for a client that has, as an example, they've got a few hundred thousand or $1 million in tax liability. What type of things would we be looking at for them?
Okay, I'd be happy to do that, Vince. So since you first mentioned things on the personal side or the individual taxation, let's go through some of those things. So one of the first ones I'd like to bring up that you and I have worked together many times with many of our clients are investments, different types of investments that have tax advantages. Imagine that, an investment that is also not only brings you income, but also brings you some tax advantages. What are some of those investments? Well, one that has been used and we use on a regular basis, Vince, as you know, is an oil and gas investment. So one of the companies that Vince uses and Vince and I have worked with through the years, and I'm happy to mention that I personally am an investor in this company, is MDS Energy. And they're a natural gas company. And by investing, so I'll give you my own personal example. By investing with MDS Energy, I am able to write off a significant portion of my investment in the current tax year. So if I were to make a $100,000 investment in 2018, when I get my K-1 from MDS Energy, it's basically going to give me an $80,000 deduction, which, as you mentioned, Vince, would be an above-the-line deduction. That is going to be something that is used to offset my adjusted gross income. It lowers my adjusted gross income by giving me a business loss on my tax return. So oil and gas investments can be very, very powerful for mitigating taxes. Now, you need to talk to a professional like Vince that can steer you towards the right investments, because remember, this is an investment. So you don't want to lose money. You're not trying to lose money to save taxes. You still want to make money, but certainly an investment that would give you a tax advantage like an oil and gas investment is a wonderful thing to have. Another investment that we have used on a number of occasions is something called a conservation easement. Conservation easements provide charitable donations for investors. And what this is used for is people who are charity-minded and both charity-minded and conservation-minded that are trying to protect property from development. They may be trying to protect an endangered species in a particular area, maybe down in Florida or somewhere where there's some endangered species, or they may be trying to protect some endangered plant life. And so what they're able to do through these investments is the investment company can lock these things up and apply to the IRS so that that property would never be developed upon in at all, ever. It is permanently locked out from development. So what the IRS allows them to do is then to take a charitable donation for their investment in this conservation easement. And how that value is determined is by what that property would be worth if it were fully developed. So many times in the ones that we see, that property is 4 to 5 times more valuable from a purely economic standpoint if it were to be developed. So let me give you an example. Someone making a $100,000 investment in a conservation easement partnership could end up with a $400,000 to $500,000 charitable donation, again, flowing through to them on their K-1 from that investment. And that investment, again, that would become then a below-the-line deduction. That would be an itemized deduction because it's a charitable donation. So a lot of planning goes into these conservation easements and the different things that we do there. Another thing we use is an opportunity zone investment. This is something that's new in the 2017 Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, which President Trump signed back in December of 2017. And these opportunity zone investments are a great tool for deferring income tax if you're facing capital gains. It also helps to reinvest money into areas which the governors of each state had declared zones which really need economic redevelopment. So the governors from each state were able to turn in these zones and ask the U.S. Treasury to approve different zones that need economic redevelopment dollars invested into these areas. And so this is something that can not only give you some tax advantages and defer capital gain income for you, it can give you some great benefits going forward. And it's also helping your community. It's investing dollars in places that really need economic redevelopment. So those investments can have some great opportunities, again, for tax deferral. Another thing that I wanted to bring up, Vince, that we have worked on again together many times with clients is something that actually raises your tax, and that is an actual conversion or a Roth conversion. If for some of our clients that have funds in an IRA, we invest these funds, or Vince invests these funds, directs them to invest in companies that are able to give substantial discounts against the fair market value of those investments for converting them from a regular IRA to a Roth IRA. So once again, let me give you a small example of one of these investments. Someone were to invest $100,000, again, in Vince, one of the companies that you recommend and I've seen you use with clients of mine and clients of yours, is a company by the name of Milgreen, who develops different Class A apartment complexes around the country. Well, if a client were to invest in that in 2018, and then what happens is when they get their K-1, they're also going to get a statement from the investment company that tells them what the fair market value of that investment is at December 31st of 2018. That's a requirement that they have to comply with since they are holding retirement funds. They, as the custodian, have to report those fair market values per IRS custodian rules, and they're required to have a third-party independent appraisal on that asset. Well, when a company like that, what they have at the end of 2018, they have not yet developed the apartment complexes. All they have is land, sticks, and bricks. They have raw land. They don't have an operating apartment complex, which would be worth a whole lot of money. So when an independent appraiser looks at that fair market value, they may come back at the end of 2018 and say that that investment is only worth 50% or maybe 60% of the original investment as of that specific date. Again, it doesn't mean that their investment has lost any money. It just means that it's not in play yet because they have yet to develop the apartment complex. So if we look at that value, if that appraisal comes back, or that fair market value comes back at 50% of the original investment, then what you have is an IRA account that was valued at $100,000, but now has a fair market value of only $50,000. We can then take that IRA and convert it to a Roth IRA and pay tax on that conversion on the lower amount of $50,000. So we pay additional tax in the current year. Why would that make any sense? The reason it makes sense is because now, let's roll forward 3, 4, 5 years, when Milgreen has, or any other company, has now developed the apartment complex, what's going to happen is that they will sell those apartment complexes once they are open and operational and fully leased out. And they may return 5 years down the road, in this example, they may return $200,000 on a $100,000 investment. So now the client has a Roth IRA that holds a $200,000 investment, and the Roth IRA is now completely tax-free. They can now take that money out during retirement and not pay any income tax, because they already paid the tax on that money when they converted it to a Roth IRA. The advantage is that they only pay tax on $50,000, not $200,000. There's some other tools that we use. Another one that we use is called a deferred sales trust. And this, again, is for somebody who has some significant appreciable assets and they want to sell those assets, but they don't want to necessarily pay the tax on that sale right now. We can help them to set up a deferred sales trust and turn that sale into an installment sale under IRS code section 453. And what that installment sale is doing is allowing them to defer the tax on that sale to when they take the money out of the deferred sales trust. So what happens is they sell the assets. Before they sell the asset to a third party, they sell them into a trust that is controlled by a trustee. And that trustee would then invest those assets with someone like Vince and be able to invest them for the client. And the client then holds a note against the assets of the trust. So the client no longer owns the asset. They just own a note against the assets of the trust. So this tool can be just a great deferral of income taxes. And one that we just recently used, client sold a business, would have had to pay $600,000 in income tax. Instead, Vince is currently investing the money for that client, that $600,000, and earning additional money for the client with that $600,000 that would have been paid into the IRS. Now, down the road, that money will be paid to the IRS. They will pay those taxes. But in the meantime, while the client doesn't need that cash, it is just growing and growing and growing with those investments. So we're using money that would have been sent to the government. We're using that money to make more money.
Let me interject a couple of notes here on that deferred sales trust, Trent. Because a lot of people are not clear on what a deferred sales trust is, how they work. So basically, they have the ability to transfer the asset they own into the trust. The buyer of the asset transfers money into the trust, and now the seller has a note from that trust. But it allows the client, the seller, the note holder for the trust, to invest. And in our case, what we're doing is we're investing the client assets that they normally would have been paying taxes on into our household endowment model. The note is typically structured for 10 years. The IRS likes to see a small minimal income payment that comes out, a withdrawal, to show that it is an installment sale. So they are receiving some kind of an installment. That could begin in year 2, year 3, and it can be minimal. And if the client at the end of 10 years decides they want to continue to defer, they can renew the note for another 10 years or another 10 years after that. And they can also make the their estate plan include that note and pass it on to their beneficiaries. So the deferred sales trust is a great strategy. And before we wrap up today, one of the things that you and I both find is that business owners usually are growing their assets in their business and they're forgetting about what they're growing outside of their business. And the second thing we always see is that these clients, these folks that own businesses, they want to sell their business at some point. The biggest issue that comes up is they need to start planning for that sale 2, 3, 4 years ahead of time. And most business owners wait until the last minute. Then all of a sudden they go to a business broker and say, okay, I want to sell my business. And then they sell their business and find out, oh my gosh, I got to pay all that in taxes. So I think, Trent, you've got a few words because you advise many different business owners on how to structure and prepare for these sales and also how to accumulate their net worth outside of being solely 100% predicated on their business.
I do, Vince, and this is, again, something that I refer to this type of a situation as long-term planning, Vince. We have when you talk about tax planning, there's current year tax planning, there's next year's tax planning, there's also long-term tax planning. Well, the reason we get into discussions with our clients regarding exit strategies is because that's a very important piece of their long-term tax planning. If we plan this out well in advance, we can not only maximize the amount that they get for selling their business, they can also defer or minimize the taxes that they're going to pay when they sell their business. So these tools and these strategies that we have for their business exit is very important. And one thing to keep in mind about an exit strategy for selling your business is that you always want to be modifying and updating that program. We have many clients that we work with on an annual or a biannual basis where we update their business exit strategy because things change over time, Vince. Your needs may change, your children's needs may change, and the tax environment may change, the economic environment may change. So all of these types of things can cause the need for changes within your exit strategy. And we try to make sure that we're taking care of those strategies and planning far in advance to help you maximize the amount that you get to keep. And again, Vince, you've heard me say it before many times. I don't care how much money you make. I don't care how much money you spend. What I care about is how much money you keep. And taxes are the biggest part of that. Since taxes are going to be the biggest expense that most people will pay in their lifetime, you want to make sure that you're planning for those and minimizing those so that you can keep more of your money. That's what we care about.
Trent Erickson, I refer to him as accountant extraordinaire, but that's just because he helps me save on taxes. So if you've listened in our prior shows, you've heard us talk about wealth management processes and the most important things that we find clients are concerned about. And the number one concern of the ultra wealthy is taxes. And their concern and desire to mitigate taxes is very important. And with that, you have to be doing planning. So what we're going to do is we're going to offer a free white paper on a couple of different subjects we've talked about today. And that is the deferred sales trust. A lot of people want to get information on how this is structured, how long it's been around. It has a great history. It has been in the IRS code for many, many, many years. And it is something that folks who have a highly appreciated asset they would like to sell and not have to pay immediate taxes on, this is something they should look at. So if anybody is interested in getting our information packet on opportunity zones and or the deferred sales trust, if you would just send an email to info@wasagaz.com. That's info@wasagaz.com. And I would recommend that you visit the website and also visit our household endowment model website, which is thehouseholdendowmentmodel.com. We've got several other white papers that are available for your review. We've got some videos, a lot of educational material. Keep in mind, the purpose of our podcast is we want to educate our listeners so that they can make intelligent decisions about the best thing to do with their money. Because as we have stated before, when it comes to money and investing, you do not get a book of instructions to come along with it. So over the next couple of weeks, we're going to take a deeper dive into the wealth management process. We are going to take a deeper dive into estate planning, and we may have a special guest here talking about natural gas energy programs, because the price of natural gas is going up, 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 and away, and there's some reasons for that. So we may try to fill in and educate you on that. And with that, I would like to say thank you very much and turn it back over to you, Jeff.
If you like what you hear on Your Money Manual, connect with Wealth Strategies Advisory Group on Facebook and LinkedIn. Give us a thumbs up, share shows and posts with your friends and colleagues, and let us know if you have a question on a topic we've covered or if you have an idea for a discussion on a future show. We hope you enjoyed this edition of Your Money Manual. Let us know. And now for Vince Annable, I'm Jeff Allen. Until next time, thanks again for listening. This program has been presented for the education of our listeners only and is not intended as investment advice, nor is it intended as a solicitation of investment products or services of any kind. We encourage you to seek the advice of a licensed professional financial advisor before making any investment decisions.